Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on sex and reproduction when we come back. Well, 3,000 years ago, before the science of meteorology was even thought of, Old King Solomon wrote in Ecclesiastes 1, verse 7, that all of the rivers run into the sea, and yet the sea is not full. Unto the place from whence the rivers come, thither they return again. Well, every year the continents and the islands of the earth pour down into the oceans a stupendous volume of water. We calculate about 286,000 cubic miles of water flow into the oceans every year. Well, for century after century and millennium after millennium, this has been going on, and the sea hasn't increased its level by so much as an inch. Now, how is that possible? Well, we call it the circle or cycle of evaporation and precipitation. The writer of Ecclesiastes, about 1000 BC, said that the ocean maintains its level in spite of this gigantic annual influx, because the rivers go back to the place from whence they came. And indeed they do. Every drop of rain that falls climbs back upon the Creator's elevator of evaporation to form themselves into clouds and then ride back to the head of their toboggan slide to begin their journey all over again. Now, in the modern science of meteorology, all of this is understood and its laws are comprehended. Modern science, today, has now learned what the writer of Ecclesiastes knew 3,000 years ago. And that's just one more of the many examples of science in the Scripture. And it's one more of the many lessons that I teach in my Mosaic Law School, conducted twice a year here at the Law School in Isabella, Missouri. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free of charge. And you can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Just click on to the email and then send an email request for that free General Law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about sex, everybody's favorite topic. How do I know that? Because it's everywhere. Sex is on television. Sex is in the movies. Sex is in magazines and books, and everybody's read the Kinsey Report, and you went to school, you got the sex education, and everybody taught you about sex. It's on everybody's mind. Jay Leno can't do a program without some sexual innuendo, without some joke concerning sex, or some movie star, or some divorce, or something along that line. Neither can Letterman. So, we, in America at least, I don't know about the rest of you people in the world, but here in America, we are obsessed by sex. Just absolutely obsessed by it. And from an old man, I can tell you that when I was a kid, there was an obsession for sex, but it was private. The old men, you know, when I was a kid, 15 years old, the old men, you know, in their 30s and 40s, they're constantly talking about sex. I mean, you got on a construction job, you're working on the farm, you're down in the fields bucking bales, and there was a constant flow from the men. I can't speak for you ladies out there, but a constant flow from the men about sex and sexual innuendos and so on. It wasn't on television, wasn't in the magazines and the books and things like that, as pervasive as it is today. But I'm going to tell you, from personal experience, that sex was on the minds of all the men out on the construction jobs and in the bars and everywhere else. They're talking about it constantly. And as a result of that, our society is sexually oriented. I mean, we're just obsessed with this constant concept of sex. I just got to bed this woman down. So it isn't a surprise that the divorce rate is 67%. Now, back in 1900, I don't know what the story was in 1900. I'm just telling you what it was in the 1950s, 60s, 70s, and so on. But in 1900, the divorce rate was 8 per 100,000 here in America. 8 divorces per 100,000 marriages. Today, it's 67 divorces for every 100 marriages. I guess that would be 670 divorces per 1,000. 67,000 divorces per 100,000. Divorce is pretty pervasive here in this country. Is there something that has to do with sex and divorce? And the answer is absolutely. In fact, when you take a look at the pleadings in court, divorce pleadings in court, one side or the other is charging sexual incompatibility. Sexual incompatibility. How in the world can a nation of people who are so obsessed by sex be sexually incompatible? I showed you David Barton's book, you know, To Pray or Not to Pray. I gave you that story a couple of times. Dynamite book. It actually has to do with prayer in public school is the main thesis of it. But on page 28, I showed you some of the quotations that these young people are learning in our public schools. 14-year-old girls learning to experiment with sex. You know, your 14, 15, 16-year-old boys learning to experiment with the girls. It's taught as part of the curriculum in your public school. And by the way, this book, David Barton, is called America to Pray or Not to Pray. If you want some shocking information about sex and sexual immorality and perversion, you know, this is the book to get. Wall Builder Press is the name of the company that makes it, Wall Builder Press. Post Office Box 397 in Aledo, Texas, 76008. And the telephone number down there is 817-441-6044. Let me give you that again. Its telephone number is 817-441-6044. Wall Builder Press, Aledo, Texas. The guy that wrote it, his name is David Barton, B-A-R-T-O-N. You can probably buy that book in a Christian bookstore. I would imagine. I don't know. I got it from the author. And while you're at it, make sure you ask for his catalog. I think there's a number of books in there that you'll be interested in. So when we were talking about this thing of sex yesterday, I took a look at Leviticus chapter 18, and I mentioned to you, I said that, you know, the Bible is filled with sexual instruction. 18 statutes and 3 whole chapters and 1 whole book of the Bible are just dedicated to sex. S-E-X. Pure, raw, unadulterated sex. And that's because sex, like eating, drinking, going to the bathroom, are natural parts of the human anatomy. Sexual relations between boys and girls, that is, married boys and girls, married men and women, is as normal as sitting down at the table and eating. But going to the bathroom, while it's very natural and normal, isn't something that you normally do in public. Did you ever notice that when you want to go to the bathroom, at least here in America, I can't speak for the rest of you, but here in America, when you want to go to the bathroom, and let's say you're down at the Olive Garden and you're having dinner, you know, with some people, and you're sitting at the table, and someone gets the urge to go to the bathroom, you don't see them pull their zipper open and just urinate on the floor. You know, if somebody has to go to the bathroom out in the parking lot, they don't just open up or squat down out in the parking lot. Here in America, we have public restrooms, and so you go into the restroom. And then, to show you how private this thing of urination is, or defecation, we go into a room and close the door. That's so that none of the rest of the dinner party can see what we're doing in there. And then when you get into this room, called a restroom, you've got stalls on the door, see? And then you go into this room where there's a toilet, that's a bowl, you know, where you sit down on it and defecate, you know, or urinate. And in here you, and here's a door there. Now watch this. You got a door going into the restaurant, you got a door going into the stall itself. I mean, we want to keep that pretty private. Now, I was thinking about that concerning sex. Don't you think that sex ought to be pretty private? Because your God, your Creator, He thought that sex should be pretty private. Very, very private. That it's something that is just done between these two people for a lifetime. I mean, they're just a boy and a girl. And for a lifetime, they're gonna practice sex just like they're gonna go to the bathroom, but they're gonna do it privately, and nobody else is gonna know what they're doing in their bedroom. All right, now that's the concept behind this whole thing. Well, here in America, we don't. Well, we practice sex right out in open. Well, at least it's portrayed out in the open, and especially this thing of oral sex. God, that just really is almost inexplicable. Oral sex. And that's almost like an oxymoron. But a part and parcel with this thing of sex is called foreplay. Foreplay. And it's in one of them, in the book called The Song of Solomon, there's a young woman. We'll cover that a little later. And she is kissing her lover, Solomon. Kissing. I've got an 18-year-old girl. We were talking here at the dinner table the other day, and my daughter, you know, she's 18 years old. Never been kissed. There's an old adage that says, she's sweet 16 and never been kissed. Why would a 16-year-old girl be kissed? Why would a 16-year-old girl be experiencing foreplay before marriage? I mean, she's not married, so who is she going to be practicing foreplay with? Oh, I forgot. Yeah, here in the book, in public school, they tell us that she should learn to be sexually unafraid and that she should be bold and socially acceptable. Girls understand now that they're far more likely to make good social and sexual adjustments to life if they learn to be warm, open, responsive, and sexually unafraid. I guess my daughter is sexually afraid because she's not letting other people kiss her. You know, kissing is a part of foreplay, and it's something that's done in the bedroom to create arousal for the sex act and copulation, the reproductive process. That's the purpose for it. So, you come in here and you flip on the TV, and you're watching the TV, and this guy grabs this girl, and he starts practicing oral sex right there on the screen. He's kissing her. He is stimulating her in foreplay for everyone to see. I can't speak for the rest of you people in America, in the world, but here in America, that's normal and natural, and we export that in our movies around the world, and I suspect that that's why people in the Muslim world think that that is insane, practicing oral sex. Well, somebody's going to write me a letter and say, but that's natural, and that's normal. And that's, well, let me give you an illustration. Any farm kid that's lived on the farm, you know, and he's 6 years old, 8 years old maybe, yeah, just young child, somewhere between the first and the third grade, and if he's ever been walking down the lane, looked over into the pasture and watched the cows and the bulls, has watched this scene. And that's where the bull, he's kind of meandering around in the field, and he sees a cow, and so he meanders up behind her, and he takes a smell. He smells her butt, that's what he does. And then she hunches up, and she starts to urinate. And while the cow is urinating, the bull sticks his nose into the stream of urine. He pulls his nose out, he fletches. And then he sticks his nose back into the stream and starts licking her butt again. See? Now, you know, that's natural and that's normal, but it's hardly the subject of dinner time conversation now, is it? And that's why I contend that this thing of turning on the television and watching oral sex on television while this guy is trying to stick his tongue down this girl's throat over here and spread AIDS, herpes, and VD, and God knows what other diseases in the process. I can't for the life of me understand how these Hollywood actresses and actors aren't all infected with some kind of venereal disease. I mean, they just practice oral sex on the screen for a living, for crying out loud. And then somebody complains about X-rated movies. We got a channel here on, I think it's Channel 31. Channel 31. Warner Brothers, WB. I don't have satellite TV. I've got an antenna on top of my roof. The reason I don't have satellite TV is I went over to the DX station. He's the local agent here for that satellite thing. Well, old Boyd gave me a brochure one day, so I went over to the DX station. Hey, Boyd, I read your brochure, and there's a lot of television here. I think it's, I don't know, $140 to have this satellite dish put into your house or on your house. $140, and then they charge you $20 or $30 a month or $50 or something. I don't know exactly what it is. And you get 140 channels or 80 channels or something. God, is it, you know, beside our four or five local channels here, I mean, I could get Disney, History, Discovery, and there were four or five channels there like History and Discovery that I would like to have. And so I said, Boyd, I'd like to order the satellite dish TV. And he said, wonderful, George. And I said, here's what I want. I want History and Discover and Disney. And there was a couple, three others, and he said, well, you're going to get all of those with your subscription. I said, but I don't want HBO, and I do not want these sex channels, and I do not want this and that and another. There's some pretty raunchy stuff there on television. I mean, you can order pure, unadulterated sex. I know I was in a motel room one day, and I was flipping through the channels and watching the ads and one thing and another, and I'm telling you that what I saw on that television, you couldn't even talk about to your wife, let alone talk about over the radio. And that's in your TV, or on your TV, in your motel room. And by the way, the second largest revenue derivative in a motel, you know what it is? See, number one is the rental of the room. You go in there and you pay $50 and you rent the room. So the motel makes most of its money off of renting rooms. Do you know what their second largest revenue generator is? Pornography on the television. It's not the television. It's the pornography on the television. That's what they make most of the money on. And big corporations, you know, like MGM and Fox and all these big movie studios, they cater to that market. Now, in America, 70% of the people in America subscribe to the satellite TV, which includes all of the sex and perversion that goes along with it. So I told Boyd, I said, I want to buy your product, but I don't want to buy the filth, perversion, and the sleaze that goes with it. And he said, well, we can't separate it out. You have to take the whole package. But, he said, you can put a blocker on it. You have to buy it. But you can put a blocker on it. I said, Boyd, wake up. I want to buy your product. I don't want to buy the sleaze that goes along with it. Separate out for me. I don't want a blocker. I don't want to buy it. I don't want 140 channels. I just want 6 or 8. I will pay you the whole $140. I will pay you the whole $50 a month. But I don't want 140 channels. I just want 6. He said, we can't do that. Oh, okay. Okay. Now, most Americans would say, well, okay, well, sell me the whole thing, and I'll put a blocker on there. I said, you can take that filth and perversion and stick it where there's no daylight. I'm not buying. I think that if all Americans did that, I think that they would separate that out. But what they want to do is they want to sell us that perversion. Because they know at some point in time, you're going to sneak a peek. Sneak a peek. And then you're going to like it. It's kind of like old Dr. Sansone told me, you know, when I was in the hospital. He said, I'm going to give you a shot of this morphine. And he said, George, you're going to like this. And he was right. Let me tell you, boys and girls, if there's anything better than morphine, the AMAs kept it for themselves. That morphine's great stuff. Make you feel good all over. Unfortunately, it's addictive, and the doctor told me, he said, now, you don't want to take any more of this than the pain allows. We're going to give you this for the pain, but, you know, it feels real good, and you're going to like it, and you're going to say, well, I hurt real bad. Nurse, give me another shot of morphine. And she'll do that. But you keep that up. And he said, you'll become addicted to it, and that's heroin out on the street. See, morphine is morphine in the hospital. It's heroin out on the street. And that's where these heroin addicts come from. I mean, hell, boys and girls, that's where sex perverts come from. And I said this a little earlier. I said, you know, if God made anything better than sex, he'd cap it for himself. Sex is a lot of fun. Sex is enjoyable. Sex is a great invention. It's designed in humans for two purposes, reproduction and pure, unadulterated pleasure. And then it's regulated by 18 statutes, and then there's two or three books in here, Proverbs and Leviticus and Song of Solomon, which have whole chapters. There's one whole book, seven or eight chapters here, Song of Solomon, that tells you about sex and foreplay and how to use it. The actual hands-on, here's how to use sex. You have never read the book Song of Solomon, and if you did, you didn't understand it, and no preacher would touch it with a 10-foot pole. God wrote that book because he needed to give instruction to you concerning sex, and he did. And Leviticus 18, where we left off last time, is an instruction book on here's who you should be having sex with, and here's who you should not be having sexual relations with. And there are penalties that go along with it. Let me give you a couple of illustrations here. When we finished yesterday, we're talking about neither shall you take a wife to her sister to vex her, to uncover her nakedness, because they're beside the other in her lifetime. Polygamy in the United States has been outlawed. Polygamy is a social status in marriage created by God. In fact, God gave David two or three wives that belonged to a guy named Saul. Saul died. And so these three women, I think, were widows, and he gave them to David. And he said to David, I gave you Saul's wives, plural. Plural. David was a polygamist, had six wives. 24 cases of polygamy, but of course, polygamy to an American mind is sin. It's wickedness. It's evil. And God made a mistake, and we Americans corrected his mistake with legislation back in 1876 when we outlawed polygamy in this country. Well, boys and girls, I'm not so sure that God made a mistake. You know, our government comes along and they pass laws that contradict the Bible. They don't force you into these sexually perverse programs or processes, but they certainly encourage it, kind of like the satellite TV people. They encourage it. So if you want to practice polygamy, you can do that in a patriarchal, but you cannot do that in a civil marriage. All right, so in talking about polygamy here, God says, now one of the laws concerning polygamy is you can marry 5 or 10 wives, that's fine, but don't marry sisters. You got that, Joe? Well, don't marry these sisters in their lifetime. Now, can you follow that instruction? I remember there was a Murray, Utah policeman, and he had a defense fund, and they wanted to argue this thing of polygamy, and they sent their committee chairman up from Salt Lake City up to Boise to talk to me about his defense. And so I told the guy on the phone, I said, well, I really don't know very much about polygamy. I've never thought much about it one way or the other. And so we made an appointment, and so I went down to the law library, and I boned up on polygamy. And boy, when I got through studying polygamy, I said, oh, well, look at this. So he came up, and he wanted to know if I could help him, and I said, let me ask you a couple questions. I said, first of all, does this guy have a marriage license with any one or more of these three women that he's married to? And he said, well, yes, of course. Of course he has a marriage license. Would he break the law? He's a policeman. Okay. I said, that's fine. I said, now, perchance, could any two of these three women be sisters? And he said, well, yeah, as a matter of fact, two of them are sisters. So I said to the man who's the committee chairman, I said, well, you can pack that one in, son, because, you see, he's in violation of both the laws of God and the laws of the state. You're in violation of the law of God because you're marrying sisters, in violation of Leviticus 18, and you're in violation of the laws of the state because you've got a civil marriage. You could have a patriarchal marriage. You could have a common law marriage with in practice polygamy, but you can't have a civil marriage in practice polygamy. Three forms of marriage here, by the way. And he was sad, and so was I, because, you know, if you take on a case, you get paid some money, but if you don't take on a case, you don't get paid anything. And I didn't get paid anything because I couldn't take on his case. But then I said, you can't win. And so they went on. In fact, the case has been adjudicated back in the 1980s. It sits right up alongside Reynolds now, the Murray, Utah policeman. He lost. Just exactly what I told him. I said, you'll lose. You can't get there from here. You're committing a crime. It's called sin in the Bible. It's called a crime in secular law. But, you know, the trick to all of this is you have to obey all the laws all the time. You got to obey all the laws of the United States, all the laws of Missouri, and all the laws of God, and do it all at the same time. Not easy, but it's not impossible. Now, there's penalties. You know, you've heard me say, you can't break a law without a penalty. Well, the Murray, Utah policeman broke the law, and he suffered a penalty. That's the way life is, you know. If you can't do the time, don't do the crime. In Leviticus 19, verse 20, whosoever lies carnally with a woman, that is a bondmaid, betrothed, that is engaged, we use that word engaged today, to a husband, and not at all redeemed, nor freedom given to her, she shall be scourged, and they shall not be put to death because she wasn't free. In Leviticus 20, verses 11 and 10, it says, and the man that lies with his father's wife has uncovered his father's nakedness. Both of them shall surely be put to death. Their blood shall be upon them. And if a man lie with his daughter-in-law, both of them shall surely be put to death. They have wrought confusion, and their blood shall be upon them. Now, I remember yesterday, it's against the law to have sexual relations with your parents. It's against the law for you to have sexual relations with your son-in-law or your daughter-in-law. And if you do, the penalty, the prescribed penalty, is death. D-E-A-T-H. Dead. D-E-A-D-E-D. All right? Now, in Leviticus 20, verse 14, we talked about the man that practices incest. If a man takes a wife and her mother, that's a woman and her mother, or the mother and her daughter, it is wickedness. They shall be burned with fire, both he and they, and there that there be no wickedness among you. Unusual. There's only two instances where people are burned at the stake. Now, you've probably heard of witches being burned at the stake. Boys and girls, the penalty for witchcraft is not burning at the stake. The penalty for witchcraft is stoning. Burning at the stake is reserved for two sex crimes. This is one of them. One of two sex crimes calls for being burned at the stake. There's 28 penalties, 28 punishments in the Bible. They're not all death, by the way. There's other ways to punish people. You can scourge them. You can whip them. If a man shall take his sister, his father's daughter, or his mother's daughter, and see her nakedness, and she see his nakedness, it is a wicked thing, and they shall be cut off in the sight of their people. He has uncovered his sister's nakedness, he shall bear his iniquity. That's excommunication. Leviticus 20, verses 19 through 21, and you shall not uncover the nakedness of your mother's sister, nor of your father's sister, for he uncovers his near kin, they shall bear their iniquity. And if a man shall lie with his uncle's wife, he has uncovered his uncle's nakedness, they shall bear their sin, and they shall die childless. Have you noticed people who are sterile? They don't have children? Did you know that the penalty for this form of incest, not all incest, just this form of incest, is that they shall die childless? Well, now, that doesn't mean that necessarily that they won't have any children born to them, but their children will die before they do. They shall die, it says, childless. That when they die, At age 87, all of their children will be dead before they are. Or it can also occur, depending upon age and time and so on, when did this event transpire? I mean, if a guy was having sex with his aunt, and he already had three children, it's a death sentence for his three children. Before he dies, they will die. If he didn't have any children, he will become sterile and they won't have any children in their lifetime. Now somebody's going to say, well, I don't believe that. Well, okay. Well, I didn't come here to persuade you. I just came here to report to you. I'm here to tell you this is the law, this is the punishment, this is the penalty. You know, if you like it, buy it, and if you don't like it, leave it lay. So, they shall die childless, and if a man shall take his brother's wife, that's his sister-in-law, it's an unclean thing, he has uncovered his brother's nakedness, they shall be childless. Deuteronomy 22:30, a man shall not take his father's wife, nor discover his father's skirt. Deuteronomy 27:20, cursed be he that lies with his father's wife, because he uncovers his father's skirt, and all the people shall say amen. Deuteronomy 27, verses 22 and 23, cursed be he that lies with his sister, the daughter of his father, or the daughter of his mother, and all the people shall say amen. Cursed be he that lies with his mother-in-law, and all the people shall say amen. And then in Ezekiel 22:11, and one has committed abomination with his neighbor's wife, and another has lewdly defiled his daughter-in-law, and another in thee has humbled his sister, his father's daughter. That's a prophecy, you know, that comes after the law. And in 1 Corinthians 5, verse 1, the Apostle Paul was inspired to write, it is reported commonly that there is fornication among you, and such fornication as is not so much as named among the Gentiles, that one should have his father's wife. There's an organization here in America called the North American Gay Man-Boy Love Association. Can you believe that? Listen to this name again. It's the North American Man-Boy Love Association. Man-Boy Love Association. Yeah, there's a lot of perversion, a lot of filth that goes on out there, and it's punishable. And there are penalties, and the punishments that come from God are invisible. There's no policeman. You don't need an Elliot's Schweitzer or Switzer, you know, to go catch you. You don't need a policeman with a radar gun. There's little microbes out there, you know, like AIDS, herpes, and VD. 25%, you young people out there, 25% of you young people between the ages of 12 and 25. You know, right at the peak of youth, 12 to 25. 25%, one out of every four, has a sexually transmitted disease. Well, that tells you a little something. You know, every time you hit that fourth girl, boys, that fourth girl should infect you, statistically. Girls, every fourth encounter that you have, you know, every fourth boy that you have sex with should infect you in America. Now, is that sick or is that sick? Hey, let me give you a reminder here. You're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. It can be accessed to the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about sex and reproduction, you know, from the biblical point of view. Our Creator has not left us without sexual information. So I started with Proverbs chapter 5, and then Proverbs chapter 7. Now I've just completed Leviticus chapter 18. I'm going to save this little book called Song of Solomon till last. That's a book written for married couples. It's married people that read Song of Solomon. There's an old adage that I can remember as a boy. It says, every man wants to marry Cinderella. He wants a wife like Cinderella. I guess that's the way it is. Every man wants a wife like Cinderella, but he wants a lover like a French whore. I guess it came from the troops, you know. Once you go to war, morality in America took a sudden nosedive right after World War I. See, after our boys went over to Europe and got a little sample of French love, they came back home, and there was an old adage that went like this. It says, how are you going to keep them down on the farm after they've seen Paris? You know, that's why I don't want morphine. I was warned by the doctor, who was a pretty good old doctor, you know. He had his head screwed on straight. Heroin addicts are made in our hospitals. And how would you know anything about heroin? Until someone gave you a shot of the stuff, and the only place you're going to get that, boys and girls, is in the hospital. And once you experience it, how are you going to keep them off the streets and jabbing needles in their arms after they've experienced heroin? It's one of those kind of forbidden love, you know. It's a, you know, there's something about something that's forbidden. I remember cigarettes were that way. You know, you couldn't smoke. Everybody's telling you, don't smoke, don't smoke, don't drink, don't drink, don't drink. Remember that? You're a kid. And say, so God, it must be good. If they're telling us not to do it, especially if your parents smoke, you know. Your parents smoke and they tell you, well, don't smoke because once you get hooked, you know you're hooked. And then they're smoking and puffing away. My dad was a smoker. Told me not to smoke. What kind of nonsense is that? Well, I couldn't wait to get my first cigarette. Same thing with drinking. You know, they're telling you, don't drink, don't drink, don't drink. And so it's the first thing a college kid does. As soon as he gets away from home, ladies and gentlemen, he goes out to sample alcohol. And what better place can you get sex, drugs, and rock and roll than in college? Well, other than public high school. I mean, you start right off in the ninth grade with somebody in sex education class telling you to go experiment with sex, but say no to drugs? Come on, kids. Now, the truth of the matter is, young people, children, need to be instructed in cigarettes. They need to be instructed in tobacco and tobacco products. They need to be instructed in alcohol. They need to be instructed in sex. I kind of question the kind of sexual instruction that they're receiving in public school. I'm not sure that the North American Man-Boy Love Association is the group that should be teaching sexual education in public school.
I think that the sexual education in public school should be taught from Proverbs chapter 5, Proverbs chapter 7, and Leviticus chapter 18, and Song of Solomon. But of course, we banned the Bible, and we banned God from our public schools. Remember? We have banned the Ten Commandments. So what's left? I mean, if you want to teach sex education in public school and put a balance on it, shouldn't you put the Bible in there? Because you've got sex education in public school from sodomites and lesbians from the gay point of view, but you don't have sex education in public school from the biblical point of view. Don't you think that that's unbalanced? I mean, if you're going to teach them sodomy, shouldn't you also teach them morality? I guess the other side of the argument is, if you're going to teach morality, shouldn't you teach sodomy? No, I don't think so. So that's why I've said I don't think that there's any hope for the public school system. The solution for you, if you don't want your children to learn this kind of perversion, is take them out of there. If you don't want to teach sodomy, then take them out of Sodom and Gomorrah. That's the logical end to that. Remember, when God was dealing with Sodom and Gomorrah, he took the four righteous people out of the city and then destroyed it. He didn't try to reform it. He said, hey, this thing ain't reformable. Public education isn't reformable. Just get the hell out. That's the solution to that problem. Sometimes people call, oh my God, I don't know what I'm going to do. Well, they're probably right. They probably don't have a clue as to what they are going to do. All right, let's take a look at a couple of three statutes over here. I'm citing from a book called The Mosaic Law. And what the Mosaic Law is a compilation of all of the laws of the Bible. There's 759 of them. 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments in the Bible. Do you know how many traffic laws you got? Well, in your traffic code, you have approximately 2,000 laws. 2,000 traffic codes. Traffic laws, statutes. You know, like buckle your seatbelt, drive on the right side of the road, stop at stop signs, you know, things like that. I mean, there's common sense kind of things that you have to know and do if you're going to be successful as a driver out on the road. Okay, well, here in the law of God, if you're going to be successful in life, then you have to know what these 759 statutes are. For instance, thou shalt not commit adultery is just one law. It's number two, thou shalt not commit adultery. It's one of the Ten Commandments. So you have Ten Commandments. One of the Ten Commandments is called thou shalt not commit adultery. And that's chapter two. It's in alphabetical order. And there's 133 subject matters, of which adultery is number two. Now, there's 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments. So when we look at adultery, we find that there is a statute that says you shall not commit adultery in Exodus 20, verse 14. Then there's a statute that supports that law. In Leviticus 18, verse 20, it says, moreover, you shall not lie carnally with your neighbor's wife to defile yourself with her. And Leviticus 20, verse 10, and the man that commits adultery with another man's wife, even he that commits adultery with his neighbor's wife, the adulterer and the adulteress shall surely be put to death. Now remember, I said to you yesterday, I believe it was, that when Jesus was meeting with this woman, the Pharisees, you know, he's having a little conversation here, and the Pharisees brought in this adulteress, he brought in a woman, and they said to Jesus, they said, now we caught this woman committing adultery in the act. I mean, we caught her, and she was laying on her back. This man was on top of her. He had penetrated her. We caught them in the act. And then they asked Jesus, they said, what should we do with this woman? And here's the statute that Jesus quoted from. The man that commits adultery with another man's wife, even he that commits adultery with his neighbor's wife, the adulterer, that's the male, and the adulteress, that's the female, shall surely be put to death. Now, they didn't bring the man, they just brought the woman. They said, hey, what do you think we should do to her? He didn't say a word, he wrote some words. He stooped down and he wrote in the dust. And you want to know how I know what it was he wrote in the dust? Because I know the law. And the law is in Leviticus 20, verse 10. And it says, where's the man? It's that simple letter. Where's the man? And remember, Jesus is the guy that wrote that law. That's the guy right there. John 1, verse 1. On Mount Sinai, this is the person right here. And he said, think not that I've come to destroy the law of the prophets. I didn't come to destroy, I came to fulfill them. I came to set you people an example. I'm going to practice this law and show you guys how to do that. And then in about Matthew 5:20, he said, whoever does and teaches these commandments, even the least commandments, will be called great in the kingdom. And he says, those that break these laws or teach against them will be called least in the kingdom. That's assuming, of course, that you make it, Billy. So there's a number of these statutes that go with adultery. So adultery is a law that is supported by 1, 2, 3, let me count them up here for you, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 statutes. And that's why you have 133 laws and 759 statutes, and that's because there's 7 adultery laws. That's how that works. You got a basic law, and then you got a lot of statutes that support it. So adultery is against the law, and so is fornication. But fornication isn't punishable by death. So when you got, you know, we're talking about these 14, 15, 16-year-old young people in high school, and they're having sexual relations, being encouraged, of course, by their sex education teacher in public school, they're committing fornication, and there's a penalty to pay for that. They'll suffer for the rest of their lives. They'll probably end up divorced. But the penalty isn't death. There's a separate penalty. So I'm going to pause right here, now that I've gone through adultery for you, and I'm going to flip over to number 100, called punishment. Punishment, P for punishment. And it's number 100 here in the book. And we can take a look at these 28 punishments. Give you a little illustration here. Come on here. George, where are you here? Here's punishment number 100 in alphabetical order. Let's take a look at some punishments over here that come from violating the law. Murder is a capital crime. Smiting of parents. I mean, if you're a 14-year-old kid, and you slap your mother or you hit her, that's a capital felony, punishable by death. Of course, here in the United States, we don't do that. Our children are totally out of control in this country, have been for 50 years. Parents today haven't got a clue as to how to train up a child in the way he should go. I'm not saying that every parent can't, but I'm just saying that America, as a general rule, Americans as a population haven't got a clue. Their children just grew up like weeds in a crack in the sidewalk. Kidnapping is a capital felony. Cursing of parents. You don't have to hit them. You can just curse them. That's a capital felony. Abortion. You know, you women practicing abortion as a means of birth control. You see, abortion has to come from fornication or adultery. I mean, just stop and think about it. Well, somebody's going to say, yeah, but this guy and his wife, they're married and they want to have an abortion. Well, okay. So I guess there's a few cases where there's a man and his wife and they don't want to have this third or fifth or ninth child over here, so she's going to go have an abortion. You know, it's surprising to me that people are so ignorant of their body functions. Now, remember I started the conversation here, sex and reproduction. I said Americans should be the most sexually alert, the most sexually cognizant nation on the planet. I mean, we just roll and revel in it. We're like a dog rolling in a dead fish on the riverbank when it comes to sex. And you mean to tell me that you women out there are so ignorant that you don't understand your body to the degree that you can't keep from getting pregnant? I mean, I'm just throwing it out there. You know, there's been sex and reproduction going on for 5,000 years, and in the last 50 years, we have been so dumbed down that you women are getting pregnant and don't know how to stop it. So you have to have an abortion? I don't know, boys and girls. It would seem like to me that Americans aren't nearly as sexually knowledgeable, not nearly as sexually alert as they ought to be. Of course, they don't read the Bible and they don't understand the laws of God, and so they want to resort to abortion. I got a daughter like that. She announced to me she'd been to college, you know. She said all abortion is the removal of unwanted tissue. Unwanted tissue. Kind of like taking out your appendix, I guess. Then there's negligent property liability resulting in death. That's a capital felony. Daylight shooting of a thief resulting in death. That's a capital felony. Witchcraft, bestiality, idolatry, profaning the Sabbath, adultery. That's our subject matter. Incest. Remember incest we were talking about? Sodomy. So adultery, incest, and sodomy are all capital felonies. So says Leviticus 20, verse 10, Leviticus 20, verses 11 and 12, and Leviticus 20, verse 13. Marriage of a man to both a mother and her daughter. Remember that one? That's kind of an odd one. Blasphemy. That's treason against God. That's punishable by death. False prophecy. You know, you ever read the papers? You know, you're checking out the supermarket, and there's the National Enquirer or the Sun, you know, sitting up there, and they got these prophecies in there. California's going to fall off into the ocean. You know what the penalty for that is? There are people in the world who are prophets. And in fact, God told us, you know, in the New Testament, He said that there would be some among you that are teachers and some among you that are prophets. And I'm a teacher, but I'm not a prophet. And I'm very careful about running around saying, hey, follow me because I'm a prophet. Listen to me because I'm a prophet. Do you know what false prophecy is? It's a guy that claims to represent God. The only guy that can make or utter a prophecy is somebody that represents God. Because God's the only guy that has the power to bring this event to fruition. So when somebody says California is going to fall off into the ocean on June 10th, you wait until June 11th. And if it doesn't fall into the ocean, you take that false prophet out and stone him to death. I mean, obviously, he's a false prophet. If California falls into the ocean on June 10th, well, then you know that that guy is a prophet of God. And that's the standard used in the Bible. God tells you very plainly, if the prophecy that this prophet utters comes to pass, you'll know that I sent him. If it doesn't come to pass, you'll know that I didn't send him, stone him to death. So going around claiming to represent this guy, I mean, you can go around as a preacher, that's not a problem. But you just ought not to be running around as a preacher claiming that you represent the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I mean, you can represent Baal, you can represent Satan, you can represent Allah, you can represent anybody you want. Just don't represent this God. This God is not kind, and He's not gentle. And I don't know who your God is. I'm just telling you that this guy that I'm reporting to you about over, this guy is not kind. He's not gentle. This is the guy that killed 450,000 Egyptians in the Red Sea in about 20 minutes. Boys and girls, that's not kind, and that's not gentle. This is the guy that killed everybody at Jericho, the entire city, men, women, and children. And in Jericho, a city of about 30,000, they estimated at that time, 30,000, a city about the size of Eureka, California. There were pregnant women in that city. There were women who were nursing little babies. There were old people. There were young people, 6 years old, going to school. And when God got through with Jericho, He had killed everybody in that city except Rahab and her family. Boys and girls, that ain't kind and that ain't gentle. Remember, this is the guy who brought on Noah's flood and killed everybody in the world except for Noah and his family. That's not kind and that's not gentle. This is not the sweet Jesus that you've been hearing about in Sunday school. This guy is not sweet Jesus. this guy's all business. When this guy speaks, I would suggest you shut up, fold your hands, and listen. And he's got another little saying over here that he's kind of a tough-ass kind of a saying here. Let me see if I can find it for you. It's in Deuteronomy, I think it's chapter 4. He's talking about people that hated him. Let me see if that's Deuteronomy chapter 4. Well, maybe it was 7 or 9. Oh, here it is. Deuteronomy chapter 7. Starting in verse 9, he says, "Know therefore that the Eternal your God, He is God, the faithful God, which keeps covenant and mercy with them that love Him and keep His commandments to 1,000 generations." So, if you're practicing the law of God, if you're practicing these statutes, judgments, and commandments, he says, "I'm going to show you mercy to 1,000 generations." Now, boys and girls, there's only been 84 generations since Moses. And he says, I'll keep my covenant with you for 1,000 generations. Let's see, 1,000 generations, how long is that? 1,000 times 40 is 40,000 years. He said, I'll keep my covenant for 40,000 years. In verse 10, listen to this. He says, "And repayeth them that hate him to their face to destroy them. He will not be slack to him that hates him, and he will repay him to his face." Hey, kids, do you think this is the kind of guy that you want to meet in a dark alley on a Friday night and have him say to you, "Hey, Charlie, come over here. I'm going to pay you to your face"? Well, I'll tell you go meet him on Friday night in a back alley. I don't want to meet that guy there. Now, that's my personal opinion. This guy ain't kind, he ain't gentle. Now, there's a little bit more to this. False prophecy is a bad policy. Reviling priests and judges, that's called contempt of court. Contempt of court, the judge fines you $50. God killed you. Reviling priests and judges, perjury. Incorrigible delinquency, that's pimply-faced punks, you know, that don't mind. Whoredom, rape, usury, and oppressing widows. That's right, oppressing widows or orphans is a capital felony. That'll get you killed. Now, there's 24 of these capital crimes, but there is 28 punishments. We'll have to take that up next time. And I'll show you what happens when you violate a law. You don't always get killed. Sometimes, you get banished, or you get whipped, or you get fined, or you get shunned. That's what the Amish call it. They call it shunning. It's also known as excommunication in normal churches. And these are the punishments, and many of these punishments come, or they're applied to, sexual misconduct. All right, I got to leave it right there and give you a final reminder, and then we'll take this up again next time. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, just go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, time's up. We got to leave it right there. I'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.